Hello, I'm Susan McNaughton, the Communications Director for the Pennsylvania Department of Corrections, and I'm working on a project where I'm collecting oral histories specifically about the 1989 Camp Hill prison riot. However, we would be remiss if we didn't mention the October 23rd, 1989 incident at the State Correctional Institution at Huntington. And talking to us today, September 5th, 2019, about the Huntington incident is Ben Varner. Thank you for joining us, Ben.
You're welcome.
Please tell us a little bit about your DOC history, your employment history.
Okay, I started in corrections in 1972 at SCI Huntington. And I went up through the ranks to the rank of captain. And when the SCI Green was being constructed in 1992, I was promoted to deputy superintendent and transferred to SCI Green. At Green, I was then eventually promoted to superintendent. I was moved from Green to SCI Retreat as superintendent there about a year and a half, and I was moved to SCI Dallas as superintendent for about a year and a half, and returned to SCI Smithfield in Huntington County near my home, and was there approximately a year and a half, and retired with like 31 and a half years of service.
Wow, congratulations. That's a long career.
Thank you.
So at the time of the October 23rd incident at Huntington, you were the shift commander, is that correct?
Well, that's correct.
And so tell me what that whole incident was about, because unfortunately that incident kind of gets overshadowed by the Camp Hill prison riot, but I think it's important for people to understand what happened at the institution. So what was your first inkling that you had an issue and exactly what was going on? Kind of lead us through what you experienced.
Well, we have been having prior to the incident there on the 23rd, we'd been having incidents, minor incidents with the Muslim population, just kind of flexing their muscles. If I recall, there was a sergeant that was assaulted, had a broken jaw, and they just kept becoming more and more aggressive. On the Friday, prior to the incident, when the inmates returned, come down from the chapel, from Juma services, there was a large group of them converged on right outside the control center, demanding that I come out of the control center and talk to them. And I told them I wasn't going to come out there, that it didn't work that way, that they needed to go to the yard or go to their block. That it just didn't work that way with them coming up and demanding that. So luckily, they agreed to do it, and they went into the yard. And as soon as they did, I notified the deputy and the major and said, you know, we need to lock the jail down. And they agreed to kind of let things cool down some. So we locked the prison down, and so that was Friday afternoon. Over the weekend, we fed them, as I recall, a tier at a time. And when I come in, I had worked about my whole career at that point on 2-to-10 shifts. So I knew that shift well, and kind of had a feel for everything on that shift. I had all the young officers on 2-to-10, and so when I come into work on Monday, on the day of the incident, I met with Deputy Don Rich, Major Price, and Superintendent Fulkemer, and they had met with inmates throughout the day and on Sunday, and kind of were assured that things were okay, they were going to be all right, and they had come to the decision that we should feed them one block at a time. I argued pretty pretty strongly against that, being that when you're on 2-to-10 shift, that's all you have is just your shift. And I said, let's wait, and we're opening up Monday or the next morning on 6-to-2 shift when you have the 8-to-4 shift people there, and you have a lot more people. And but they felt pretty comfortable, and the inmates had assured them there'd be no trouble. So we discussed it some more, and I said, well, I advocate. I said, well, how about at least giving me a squad of men in reserve that I can have somewhere in case something doesn't go right? And they agreed to that. So I had I think it was approximately 10 extra men that I held in the RHU that was kind of my reserve. Well, we sent the block, the first block, A block, which is the one that ended up being in the ride, down to Eat. And I had a junior captain there by the name of Captain Cal, and I kept him out. I'm in a secure bubble there, but I can see everything that's going on. It's like in the rotunda, if you're familiar with it there.
Yes.
So I kept him out front to keep a monitor on it, and I talked to him, had him talk to all my officers in the block. And then the last thing that I wanted to happen was if something happened, we don't give them the chance to take any hostages. You know, we can always go take a block back, but I don't want them to have any of our officers in there. I'd had the same situation about a year or so before that over an inmate that had come to our prison that had AIDS, and that was the saving grace, was I was able to pull the officers out so they didn't have anybody to take hostage and beat up on. So that was kind of, from past experience, that was the way we were going to roll. So the inmates went down to Eat, and they come back, and as soon as they come back, a large group of them gathered on the one side of the block, and the sergeant reported to Captain Cal there, hey, these guys are up to something down there. We're banging the bars, telling them to go on in, and they're not going in. So I pulled my six or seven of the reserve officers. I sent them in there, and anybody didn't want to get involved in whatever these guys were up to or whatever, let's try and minimize what we got. So they were able to lock some, and then Captain Cal came to the corner there and said he wasn't liking the feeling of it. So I told him, we'll pull the officers back down to the front of the block, and if anything, it looks like that they're going to try and rush you or anything, slam that grill so that they can't have hostages. And so we pulled our officers down, and they were directing the inmates, go to your cells. And all at once, this group of inmates just rushed the front of the block. Well, the officers all stepped out on the control center side of the grill, and Captain Cal pushed the door shut. And they come running up around the side of the block. They had went in their cells. Some of them had table legs. I think there was, at that time, there might have been even some of the scaffolding brackets. And, of course, they come up around there thinking they're going to beat up on some officers, and they had no one to fight with.
Well, thank goodness. I do have a quick question. So how many overall inmates were housed in that block? And of those, how many inmates were involved? And then how many officers were on the block?
On the block, there would have been a sergeant. And at that time, we probably had 3 officers in the block.
Okay.
I believe I sent 6 or 7 of them, the reserve officers, in whenever they came back. Mm-hmm. Usually you had a ring of keys that all those grills leading out of the rotunda area, you know, of like all the spokes that go off of each cell block, that's on a ring. Mm-hmm. Well, I had taken them all and brought them into the control center, just except A. And actually, whenever they came back from chow, I took that one so that if some inmates got in the block but out into the center and we could shut the grill, then they couldn't get the key and open it back up, and we'd have a smaller amount to deal with. That block at that time, I'm thinking it had 128 cells, and most of them were doubled, so you were looking at, and I'm guessing, so around 230, 240 inmates in that block.
Okay.
And I want to say 70 or 80 were in the group that came up.
Wow. That's still a big amount.
Yes, a large amount.
Yeah.
They immediately started trying to set fires. They busted up the schedule board on the wall where it told you which inmate lived in what cell, and the desk got flipped and you could start to hear things crashing. Well, at that time, Major Price was in his office. He was doing a report on what had happened over the weekend about locking the jail down Friday, and I remember I called him. I said, if you're not too busy, Jim, we got a riot going on. You better get down here. So he come down. We blew our whistle. We're right there in town, and it always brings the troops running. Activated the emergency plan, our call chain, and got a fire hose as quick as we could there to the front of the block, and just kind of maintained. There was a lot going on. They set up a command post out in Superintendent Fulkemer's office, and he was constantly calling me and wanting a report from me, and I'd fill him in, and he would tell me what was going on. There was big discussion on what, when it was decided that maybe the best thing would be to fire a couple rounds down into the block, and it was a lengthy discussion. Are we going to use buckshot? Can you take regular shotgun shells in there, bird shot, or do we got to use plastic shot? And we're gathering officers coming, we're getting a lot of people in with dressed in our riot gear, and I think, you've read the report, and I can remember they said we had to have so many state police there before we could do it, and right out in front of the control bubble, there were eight or nine of them lined up across there, and I can remember looking out at them, and they looked like kids standing out there. I think they must have been newbies coming up from the academy.
Wow.
To get that many, and that's scary, all that screaming and yelling and banging around. And I could remember looking out at them and I bet they're thinking, what did we get into here? they formulated their assault plan for my, in Fulkemer's office, and he called me and told me what was going on. And, you've read the report, and they positioned everything. And then Tom called me and he said, okay, Ben, from here on in, it's yours. You're in charge now. You're inside, so you're running it. If you need to shuffle people from down below up to the chapel, whatever you got to do, it's yours now. So, of course, Andy stepped into the chapel and fired the rounds down through there, through the block. And you read the report. It's pretty extensive about how they assaulted and moved down to tiers. Very well organized. Everybody communicated real well back, so that we were all on the same page. And I can remember at one point there, Jim Grace, who ended up being the superintendent there, come out. He was a lieutenant, and he come out onto the box there in the corner where I could talk to him, and he could hardly catch his breath, and he said, Ben, I think we've killed six of them so far. And I'm like, boy, this is, you're in there, you really don't know how it's going, because officers are coming out with, there was one come out of the broken arm. The first one came out, had got hit down over the head. He had blood running down over his face. And you're just hoping that we sent enough soldiers in there that they were going to be able to handle it. I know right before it actually got down to the hand-to-hand and fighting them, Lieutenant Hammond called and said, Ben, they want to talk. And I said, well, tell them to lay down and, we'll handle this. And started throwing everything they had. And, it was a real Donnybrook for a while.
How long did it last?
So I'm thinking that it seemed to me it took 45 minutes, an hour or better before the word was given to go ahead and assault, and actually going down through and till things were settled down seemed like forever, but it was probably from the time Andy fired the shots, I want to say a half hour.
Wow. Okay.
Some of the guys, they were there for the duration. They were not going to quit until they were completely subdued. There was no giving up in them.
Now, I wanted to go back to, you were talking about communicating. How, back then, did you communicate with the officers? Like, did you have radios?
Yes, we had radios. The lieutenants had radios. Captain Mars, at one point, I think he was given a radio, and he stayed on the grill, on the control center side of the grill, and like would send the officers in. But yeah, they had radios, and when Captain Cal was on, I had him on the A grill from where he was at to the corner of the secure control bubble. Mm-hmm. Was probably 15 feet, 20 feet at the most. Mm-hmm. So as these guys were in the initial there before they come up there and tried to take the grill, he would come over to me and say, "Ben, I'm not liking it. I don't like it." But we were getting inmates locked in and reducing the amount that we were going to have to deal with. And then he came over and he said, I'm starting to get a little shaky. And I said, "Bring them out. It's time. Let's get them out. Get them right down there at the grill. And if they decide that they want to go in, they can go in. If not, just have the officers step out on the outside." And so that's him and I were in direct communication. It wasn't over radio. So
right. And I was thinking, as you were talking about like the first couple of days leading up to this, how the inmates were kind of congregating in front of the control area. I think for people who don't know Huntington, like you said, the control area is in the center, and then the cell blocks kind of, like you said, like a wagon wheel, they kind of jut out from there. So had you had all of that movement going on and those inmates staying in that area, that could have been really bad, really bad.
Yeah. Yes.
And it could have spilled into the other cell blocks and vice versa. So at least you had the forethought, like, this isn't right. You needed to have better controlled movement, and you were able to really kind of keep it smaller, and potentially it could have been really big.
Yeah. And fortunately or unfortunately, that had happened to me twice before. We had a ride in C block, one of the blocks that come off, and one in D block. And the one in D block was the first time that a cell block that we talked about later on, that we ever abandoned the cell block to save the officers. Mm. We had gotten in, and I'm kind of digressing here. We'd gotten an inmate in that had AIDS, and the inmates were upset that we put him in population. Mm-hmm. And they did the same thing. They were going to take over the cell block and come at the officers with clubs. But I had all the officers. I was actually the junior captain out on the floor that night, and I pulled the officers out just as the inmates come around in the corner with sticks and clubs and broom handles and going to beat up on the officers in the same situation. So I'd already had a little experience of doing that. And so I just used the same thing there whenever an A block jumped off.
Tell me what was different about these inmates. You said they were the Muslim inmates that seemed to have the problem. And then, of course, we know in Camp Hill, the Fruit of Islam inmates were part of the issue as well. What was different about these inmates for you at Huntington?
We had had a good bit of trouble with them. They were just always pushing. had to deal with one of them, and it ever turned physical. Then a bunch of them would come and they'd want to say, I want to see, we demand to see this, and we demand this, and we demand that. Specific issues right now, it's not coming to my mind, but there was a lot of tension with them. Mm-hmm. They just became more arrogant, pushy.
And were they overall a younger group of inmates? Were they in their, like, 20s?
Actually, the fruits of Islam were the young ones. Uh-huh. They were real mouthy. They stirred it more than your Sunnis. The Sunnis, I remember there were three or four of them that were, I think actually they might have been trying to calm things, but they had a lot of young inmates, and they were just feeling their oats and would try and push the limit. I really, on Friday afternoon, I don't know what they expected, that they were going to issue a bunch of demands. But my main concern was just making sure that they didn't take the jail then. Mm-hmm. And then as soon as, I notified Deputy Glomovich, and I don't remember if I called him or the major, told him I was able to get him to agree to go out of the center, and that I got the rest of the jail secured and all the grills locked, and so we have those ones out there, and so we secured the rest of the block, and then we brought them in just a few at a time and locked them up. I think it could have went right then, because I wasn't going to leave the control center. I'm running the shift, and had I went out went out to talk to them or whatever, and I don't know where that would have went from there, but they didn't get a chance at that point to take the jail.
So did they actually want you, or did they just want the shift commander, and you happened to be the shift commander?
Well, no, they wanted to shift me.
Right.
As shift commander, I'm the captain there, and I probably knew more inmates by name than anybody in that jail. At that time, I had 17 years in, 16 I'm on the 2-10 shift. Mm-hmm. And knowing, how prisons run, on 2-10 shift from 4 o'clock on, when work lines come in, those inmates are, they're in your face all the time. And I ran cell blocks. I knew a lot of the inmates. They knew I knew about all of them by name. And they saw me in there, and they wanted to talk to me. I had another captain been there. I don't know if they had done the same thing or not.
Now, so what happened to the leaders of this incident then? Were they kept there and then charged, or were they shipped to other institutions, and particularly did they end up getting shipped to Camp Hill?
You mean on Friday?
Yes.
No. I don't think nobody was shipped out then.
Okay.
There were some of those inmates. I'm trying to recall if any of them, I don't think anybody got locked up over the Friday incident, because when I ended up ordering them to leave the control center and go out to the yard, that I wasn't going to come out there and talk to a mob like that. We just kind of stood there. They could hear me on this speaker box. Said, it's not going to happen. You want to talk, or you guys see me out here all the time. We're not going to do it this way. So you need to go right into the yard.
But then what about after the Monday incident?
After the Monday incident?
Mm-hmm.
That night, a lot of them were taken over and put in the RHU. There were inmates taken to court,
mm-hmm.
sentenced for assault. And a lot of inmates were shipped to other institutions.
Mm-hmm.
They took some of the leaders that, the inmate imams that they knew, got rid of them. It was a tense situation for a good while after that. I can't recall how long we kept the institution locked down. Mm-hmm. But as soon as, you know, we could get back in there that night and made sure, had everybody go in, we had one lock broken, and the guys went and checked the cell doors and make sure that the bars that hold them were, everything was good and secure, and we had inmates, they had, I think, three different doctors in that night.
Wow.
Treated a lot of the inmates there, stitches for cuts and whatnot. And if I recall, there were 43 officers that went to J.C. Blair Hospital to be, for one reason or another.
And you said one had a broken jaw, and then one had a broken arm, and one had a head laceration. So,
well, the broken jaw was, as I recall, was before that. Like, I'm talking, say, a week before they come down from the chapel from Juma service, a week or two. A guy named Sergeant Weaveling had his jaw broke. There were a couple other incidents there, physical incidents that were close to that, as I recall. You know, like individual inmates being defiant and physical force, had to, you know, physically restrain them and take them to the RHU.
Wow. So after things finally settled down, and then a couple of days later, it was October 25th. What did you think when you heard about Camp Hill?
I just thought, first thing to come to my mind, I'd got a call about going to Camp Hill to be a deputy.
Oh.
Actually, it was Terry Henry had called me and said, "Ben, why don't you come down here to Camp Hill and be the other deputy?" And I went down and rode around and looked around, and I decided, no, I wasn't interested in that. And the next day, Camp Hill was, what, the 25th?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. I come into work 2 to 10 that day, and Fulkmer was there, and he goes, "Ben, they want you to go. They called up here and wanted me to send you down to Camp Hill." And he said, "Unless you really object," I told him no, that we're still a lot of tension here. We have a lot going on, and you're the shift commander here, and I'm not letting you go. Now, anyway, we were pretty good close at that time because of some of the incidents that we'd had there to jail. And I was like, nope, this is my jail. I'm going to stay here. And I just felt bad for those people down there. You know, it's easy to second guess people, and I just felt so sorry for them and those officers, what they had to go through, and you know, what can you say when you heard the horrible things that happened?
Yeah, I actually interviewed Tab Bickle, who was a hostage during the first night at the Camp Hill riot, and didn't he later on go on to be the superintendent at Huntington later on? And and now he's one of our executive deputies overseeing all of the institutions. So it's just kind of interesting how things turn out.
Yes.
Yeah. But, you know, what I definitely had to talk to you about Huntington. I also hear that there were some incidents or was a mini riot as well at Rockview. So I have to reach out to Rockview staff as well. But I think it's good thing that you were where you were at the time, because it just really sounded under complete control, really, especially compared to Camp Hill. And there was a lot of communication issues and just a lot of different warning signs that it seemed like, it just seems like Huntington was so much better handled. So thank you for that.
And so that come I guess I want to say from experience, being that many years on that shift, and you just kind of, you get a feel for things. Mm-hmm. Like I said, twice before, I was right in the middle of it. One time as a sergeant, a bunch of inmates thought they were going to take over the prison, and they rushed to C Block Grill. And that night, to save the whole prison, I ended up having to shut the grill with the officers on the inside. Oh. And we lost an officer that night that was never able to come back to work. His whole side of his face was caved in, and a couple of the officers, I'm on one side of the grill and they're on the other side, and they're getting beat up. And so I kind of made up my mind, I ever got in a position that they're not going to beat up on the officers. We'll lose the cell block and we'll take it back, but we won't lose the whole prison, and I'm not going to let my guys get hurt. And sure enough, the next year, the same thing, incident with the inmate that had AIDS that they were all upset with. They thought they were going to come up around the front of the block with their clubs and beat the officers, and they didn't have anybody. And it, you know, they did about $40,000 or $50,000 damage to the block, but we didn't get any officers hurt that night. And
thank goodness. Yeah. Well, is there anything else that you wanted to mention about this incident?
No. The officers, they did a fantastic job. And I think getting right back in there and taking it back as soon as we could, keeping it as small as we could, and being prepared, I think what kept it to a minimum. So,
yeah. Thank you.